Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 103 of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today we have three segments for you and then a bonus segment. Kicking the show off, Alex and myself talk about this week's releases and Nintendo news. After that, Alex has a new mini-segment all about the Persona series and why Nintendo fans should pay attention to it. Closing out the regular show, Don has an interview with Different Cloth. And after the outro, we have a bonus segment all about the upcoming Doctor Who 50th anniversary special with myself, Nicholas, and Amanda. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to This Week in Nintendo, our recurring segment where we kind of break down all the news from the week, all the digital releases, all that good stuff. I'm Scott Thompson, and today I'm joined by Alex Kalafi.
Hey, Scott.
So, normally we kind of just break down the week's releases, because there's not usually a ton of news that doesn't kind of warrant its own segment, but there's a little bit that came out with Wii Sports Club and Wii Fit U, so we'll talk about that at the end of the segment here, but let's start first with everything that's come out this week on the eShops. So obviously the big one is The Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker, the HD remake, just came out. Well, as we're recording this, it would have come out last night at midnight. Now I know you're knee deep in Grand Theft Auto right now, Alex, but are you interested at all in The Wind Waker? Are you one of those people who says $50 for this is just too much and you're not interested?
I'm not interested, but okay. No, I've never played The Wind Waker to completion on GameCube, and I definitely want to do that. I see this as probably the best way to jump in, and I totally respect people who are excited for this game. However, based on what they promised and based on what we got in Ocarina of Time 3D, I don't think I can justify plunking down $50 while I just dropped $60 on GTA, and then November is going to have PS4 and a bunch of Nintendo games.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense right now to me.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, this is probably the latest it could have come out where I can kind of justify it. If it had come out any later, I would definitely skip over it. What with Pokemon and then Mario World and, you know, everything like that. There's so much coming. But this is another game that, to me, could have benefited from coming out, like, a couple months sooner. Launching the same week as arguably the biggest game of the year doesn't help either.
Yeah. You gotta wonder though, like with, what's it called? Wind Waker. I definitely wonder how much development time they had on that. I'm guessing it was not very long, and I'm guessing they did put it out ASAP. Obviously, getting it out sooner would have been optimal, but I think they rushed the development and then just put it out.
Just put it out when they could. You're probably right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how long, you know, it's been in development. When was it even officially announced? Was it
January Direct, I think.
Okay, so yeah, so less than a year, so, and you know, they obviously have been working on it before they announced it, but still, so, yeah, you're probably right, but yeah, it would have been great to get this during the summer. This would be a good summer game, but yeah. Anyway, then we also have Scribblenauts Unmasked, a DC Comics Adventure, which comes out on Tuesday, available on the eShop and in stores. Not all that interested, personally.
Yeah. Super Scribblenauts was enough for me, and then I just stopped caring. I played the Wii U one, and it just didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, the Wii U one was probably the best that I played, but not good enough to like make me need to play more of them. Like I've seen it, I've done it. Like I don't know, as a series, it just doesn't really grab me for whatever reason.
You have enjoyed the Scribblenauts experience,
exactly. Yeah, I mean, I understand this is all DC themed. That's kind of interesting, but not enough to draw me in really. And that's also coming out on 3DS. And then also hitting 3DS, this upcoming week is FIFA 14, I guess the only Nintendo platform getting it. Is there a Wii version coming out? I think there might be a Wii version coming
out. Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't, but I think there might be. Oh gosh, what is this? Hakuki Memories of the Shinsengumi?
Yeah, that's just more localized filth.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. And then Shifting World. I'm also not 100% sure what that is.
Me neither.
Yeah, but it's only $7.99. We have it listed in retail games, but $7.99 would make it seem like more of an eShop game. I think that's lifted in. Oh no, yeah. No, it was a retail game.
It was like republished.
I think so. Yeah, because it originally came out April 24th in 2012. So it looks like they're just now bringing it to the eShop for.
What's the game called?
Shifting World. JP, give it a 7.5.
Wow, so, I don't remember that game at all.
It looks like kind of like a neat little puzzle game. It's all in black and white. It kind of looks like the old Spy versus Spy.
So $7.99 is probably a good price for it then.
Yeah, that doesn't sound bad. I mean, I don't know how much it was when it came out, but I'm sure it was a whole lot more than $7.99, so.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Then let's see. So then, we've got some sales. We have, the Monster Hunter is on sale, I think, on, it says here on the 3DS, but is the Wii U version on sale too, or is it just the 3DS?
I saw the story on Go Nintendo, and I am almost 100% sure that both versions are 50% off.
I thought so too, which is a really good deal.
Yep. Very good games. If definitely, love it or hate it, but if you're into it, you get really into it.
Yeah. And that for as much content as there is, I mean, half off, it seems like a real bargain with those games. I know people have like just sunk in, you know, over 100 hours, so.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. And then Chasing Aurora is for sale on the Wii U eShop for $4.99.
It's been on sale a few times already, hasn't
it? Yeah, I believe so. And then on the 3DS eShop, we have Air Race Speed, which I don't really know too much about, but we did last week. Don had an interview with the studio that just made the game. So if you haven't listened to that, check it out. They talk a little bit about the game and just kind of developing for the 3DS in general. So then we have Mahjong 3D Essentials. Not really interested in that whatsoever. Star Wars Pinball hits the eShop on the 3DS, which, you know, neither here nor there. And then Rage of the Gladiator. Which also I don't know much about, but I know we have a review code for it, so there should be a review code or a review of it coming up soon. So there's that. The 3DS Virtual Console got Solomon's Key. Eh.
Yep.
Not really. You know, it's okay. And then the Wii U got Super Mario Brothers.
Finally.
So yeah, you finally have a way to play it.
The long-awaited Super Mario Brothers,
long-lost, the legend of a game, has finally hit the Wii U. So. There you go. And then we had on DSiWare, not really all that important, but we had Tales to Enjoy, The Ugly Duckling, and Tales to Enjoy, The Three Little Pigs. I guess these are sort of like interactive stories. So it's there. You know, if my daughter was like a couple years older, maybe I would download this and see if she'd get anything out of it. But
realistically, you probably wouldn't, though.
Nah, maybe not. Maybe I could try to get review codes for them or something. I don't know. But so there's that. $2.99 a piece. But anyway, let's get to kind of the big news. We had a surprise Nintendo Direct on, what was it, Tuesday, I think? The 18th? Wednesday morning. And we got news about Wii Fit U and Wii Sports Club, which we didn't even know anything about. And it's kind of interesting, really. It's very weird what they're doing with both of these titles. So Wii Fit U, on November 1st, a little bit more than a month before the game officially comes out, the full version will be free on the eShop for 1 month. When you download it, you get a free month of it. And, after your month is over, you can buy the Fit Meter, which is like the little pedometer you carry around with you, for $19.99, and then that unlocks the full game for you. Assuming you have the balance board. You need the balance board too, but.
But it's 100% the full game. Like, I was looking at it, and it's in like, it said the word trial, and then it said you can play it for an unlimited amount of time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Were they just getting around the fact that they're just saying you can get the full version for $20?
Basically, yeah. And see, that's it's kind of weird about it. But yeah, here's their wording in their press release. Nintendo is offering Wii U owners a chance to download a full version of Wii Fit U for free. So yeah, so it's the full game. It's not like a trial version where you're only getting so much stuff. It's just a trial in that you only get a month to use it. But yeah, assuming you have a balance board and everything, for $20 you get the full game then by buying the Fit Meter.
I mean, I know this is probably less news for you since I believe you are on the review for the game, but I don't know. Like, I wouldn't have bought the full game at $80, but since I think my sister has a balance board downstairs and I have $20 at most given times, I might try to get the full version. You know, just to try it. It's only $20, right?
I mean, exactly. That's really smart, especially if you already have the balance board. Like, I'm gonna have to find mine, actually. I think it's upstairs in the closet somewhere. But yeah, I still have my balance board and everything. And it's interesting. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of bizarre. I'm wondering how it's going to be sold in stores. Like, even if you haven't downloaded this trial, is the Wii Fit, meter going to be there? And then, you know, it comes with like a digital download code or something. Not that you even need it since it's going to be free online, but can you even just buy the disc separately? I mean, it almost sounds like you can't. Like, I feel like You know, okay. You either buy a full set that comes with a New Balance board, or you buy the fit meter and it comes with it. Like, I don't think you'll be able to buy the game by itself.
It's definitely curious, because I was thinking about this, like, when I saw the press release that morning, and I was thinking about why Nintendo could do it, I think the conclusion I came to was, it's not necessarily an ambassador program, but it is a way to basically give people on Wii U something to play. It also gives people who are on the fence with the Wii U after the price drop an extra incentive to get it, especially if they were considering getting Wii Fit U to begin with.
Right.
And because it's only for, like, a month, I think it's available, this trial. Or, like, maybe a couple months. It's weird.
Well, and it's a limited amount of time. You can download the trial up until January 31st of 2014.
Okay. And then, after you play it for the first time, you have a month to unlock it.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. So it gives... I think it'll convince a few people to buy more Wii U's.
I think so, like, especially families. Like, if you know, your mom and dad or whoever were using Wii Fit, this seems like a good extension. Like, well, look, if we buy the Wii U for $20, we'll have the next Wii Fit. You know, which is good. I mean, it is kind of smart.
Yeah. Cause it's a smart move because, like, at the beginning, people don't really own Wii U's right now. So they'll be able to make more money than they probably would be able to at charging it for $80 for one package. And then for the people, if the Wii U does end up catching on and selling a bunch, this game will sell forever in its full state.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of weird too, like we were talking a couple weeks ago, I think, about how it's cool that Nintendo's been doing their digital releases sooner than their in-store releases. And now we've got the opposite. This will be available in stores December 13th. You have the free trial available till the 31st, and then on February 1st, the full game for sale is available on the eShop, which is really weird. So I don't know how much the full version is going to cost on the eShop. It's just a really weird kind of system they have set up for this, I guess. I mean, I'm interested to see how this pans out, but it's very kind of bizarre to me that this is the route they took it. Not bad, just bizarre.
Out of curiosity, this whole Nintendo Direct, did they announce it before it actually happened, or did it just get posted alongside a press release?
As far as I know, it just got posted. Like, I woke up that morning, and it was just like, Nintendo, you know, like, they just announced, here's a Nintendo Direct, all about Wii Fit U, like, go watch it. Kind of the same as, like, that Earthbound one, where it just hit, you know, and that was it. Like, there was, it wasn't live or anything, it was just a pre-recorded kind of thing.
Yeah.
That just showed up, so... kind of bizarre, but I'm excited. I wonder what this is going to do for our review, because, you know, we were expecting it to come out in December, so I'm like, okay, like, I'll probably get it sometime in November, have a few weeks with it, you know, like normal when we review games, and so on and so on. But it's like, well, if this is officially coming out November 1st now, like, are they sending out review copies in October, or are there even going to be review copies, you know? Like, am I going to be reviewing this while everyone else is already playing it too? you know?
Yeah, it's really bizarre, but I think there's a chance of you getting a review code early, just like as the fully unlocked trial. Because it is the digital version. Like, the reason they're waiting until February to release the digital version isn't because it won't be done. It's to give this promotion breathing
room.
That's
true. Because this is the digital version. It's just free. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So we'll see. But yeah, hopefully they do send us something a little early, because that would be good. So there was that. And then out of nowhere, we got the Wii Sports Club. Which also kind of an interesting approach. So rather than like an in-store, you know, disc charging you like $40 for it or something, this is an online only, at least as of now, sort of, piecemeal offering of Wii Sports, redone with HD graphics and most importantly online play for all of the games. So instead of buying one bulk thing, you can buy each game separately for $9.99. You can also buy like a 24-hour pass for the games for $1.99. So if for some reason you have friends and family over and just want to play bowling, you know, right then and there, and it's a one-time thing, you can pay $1.99 and play it for that day, which is also kind of interesting. And then the big thing, they call it Wii Sports Club because you can set up clubs with your friends or people online and then face off against other clubs and compete, and I guess it keeps track of your like rank and stats and everything. So it's kind of interesting. What do you think?
I
figured you weren't sold on it.
Well, no, I think $9.99 for each game is too much. Well, I need to be convinced that it's not too much, and I don't think I will be, because Nintendo doesn't always have the clearest grasp on how to price their things correctly. For this, I am most curious about what the games actually end up being control-wise, because if you remember that first E3 video where they showed off the Wii U, they had that crazy golf demonstration.
Right, where you're looking down at the gamepad and it's got the ball on the tee and everything, yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder if that's going to be it.
Yeah, they did say they reworked everything so it uses Wii Motion Plus, you know, all these games, so there is that. But yeah, I don't know, they didn't mention that, so that'll be interesting. But
Do you think it'll be required, the Wii Motion Plus, or do you think they'll shimmy in button controls too?
Oh man, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't think it says anywhere here if it's required, just that every game's been enhanced to use it. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wonder if they will make you require. I mean, at this point, all new remotes obviously come with it built in. They might just make you have it. You know, I don't know. But we'll see. And what's weird too is they're not all coming out at once. We're getting bowling and tennis first on November 7th. And then after that, baseball, golf, and boxing will just come out in the months ahead, they said. So we don't have a concrete, date for that. But I do agree that like $9.99 for each is a lot, because at that point you're paying $50 for these games if you get all of them. But $9.99 if I'm paying and just getting bowling, which is probably all I would do, and maybe tennis, cause I do kind of like the tennis one. I could live with that. But I do agree if you're getting everyone, I wish they'd do some kind of discount. Kind of like they did with the new, Street Pass games, where it's like if you buy three, you get the fourth one free.
Yeah.
Some kind of bundle.
I'm really curious if they're doing this, to ease the weight of the next Wii Sports game, or if this is their next Wii Sports game. Because it's a little bizarre that they're choosing to do this, and they're not choosing to make a full $50 package
right.
That includes like 15 HD games and maybe the 5 from Wii Sports on top of that.
Yeah.
And then they're making it like one big package. Like, I don't know if they're going to be that successful with this, because yes, everyone loves Wii Sports, but everyone loved Wii Sports back in 2006 when it was a new idea. Putting like a real price on it that's not the Nintendo Selects label and expecting it to be the same megabuster just isn't going to work, especially if it's download only.
Right, that's how I kind of feel. I mean, between this and Wii Fit U, this seems very much like Nintendo kind of going back to the well and trying to get in some more, I won't call them casual, but that's the word I'll use because I can't think of a better one. But, you know, like the casual Wii owners who only did play Wii Sports and maybe Wii Fit. You know, you have both of these coming out before the holiday. And yeah, both just appealing to that audience. But you have them distributed in kind of weird, you know, if maybe not obtuse, but just kind of unique different ways that maybe these people aren't going to be used to. Now if you did release this, or maybe you had a new bundle come out right before Christmas that had Wii Sports, you know, installed on the system, I think that would be big. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. And when you're trying to appeal to those people, I mean, are they going to have commercials for Wii Sports Club and then say, you know, log into the eShop and download it? It's weird. I'm really surprised this isn't on disc as well as sold separately on the eShop.
Yeah.
I bet eventually it'll probably come to a disc, but I'm just surprised that they're not trying to bang that out before the holiday season.
It's very much a wait and see kind of approach. Like, I just don't know how this is going to do. And like, if the Wii U doesn't sell, it won't do good regardless. But I'm very curious to see, like, even in the context of how the Wii U is selling, if this is going to be successful, if the people who actually know how to use the eShop are going to be buying this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would think most people who own a Wii U now aren't the people who are, like, desperately needing a new Wii Sports game. So, yeah, like, the people who own a Wii U now aren't probably going to, I wouldn't think, aren't going to download a ton of it. I mean, there'll be some. Bowling is going to be a hit regardless. But as far as the other games, I don't know. And, yeah, it's just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting choice. But the online play is much appreciated. It'll be the first Nintendo-published Wii U game to have, or I should say Nintendo-developed Wii U game to have online play, which is nice.
Is that true? Well, I mean...
Isn't like, it? I mean, what other Nintendo game has, you know, online play?
Well, we're obviously not counting Miiverse integration here.
No, no.
So there was Pikmin, which I don't think is online, right?
No, it's not.
Okay, and then... Definitely not New Super Mario Bros. U, not Wonderful 101.
Not Nintendo Land.
not Nintendo Land, not Lego City Undercover, and I believe those are the only major releases outside of Zelda, which obviously does not have competitive online play.
Right.
So yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain. Yeah, so that's interesting, and I'm excited about the club aspect. Like, I think it will be fun if we get some like NWR clubs going. You know, like we have staff against you know, different groups of readers and listeners and stuff. That would be fun. Turn into a big game night and everything. That'll be good. But I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, I definitely think this and We Fit You coming out before the holiday together is definitely trying to draw that crowd back in who haven't like been won over yet by We Fit. Or I'm sorry, by Wii U. So we'll see. And then we had a little bit of Pokemon news. Did you want to talk about that for a second, Alex?
Yeah. So the big story that isn't new this week, because apparently this news has been out for a while, but it just became noticed this week that in Pokemon X and Y, the 3D effect will only be used during battles. During the overworld segments, where you're just exploring the world and stuff, there will be no 3D as far as I'm concerned. And as, if I remember the interviews correctly, Masuda was saying that they did this as a conscious decision because they thought the art was so good that they thought it would be lost if they dropped the frame rate and they made the Jaggies a little more pronounced in the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you what I think about this, Scott.
Go ahead.
I think it is a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
Because I really like 3D. I know some people don't care about the 3D and some people actively dislike the 3D. I really like the 3D. I keep it on in all of my games. And I also am especially bummed that Pokemon's not doing it. Because it's not like they don't have the resources or time to do it. Because if Battleship, the Activision-published game based on the movie, can carry full 3D, Pokemon can probably do it too. So the other thing, though, to consider is that these guys have been making Pokemon games for a long time, and it would be unwise not to at least trust them a little that they know what they're doing. So I am holding hope up that they're doing the best decision and that this art looks so good when I'm playing it that it was actually a better option to not allow me to choose whether to have 3D on or off,
mm-hmm.
rather than to just have it be 2D like it is.
Yeah.
So when I review it, it's going to be very interesting because I can't necessarily take points off for what it doesn't have, but I will be critical of the art if they are hyping it up so much. Not to say I'll shit on it just for the sake of shitting on it out of spite, but if they think this art is so good and this is what they're trying to sell me on, I'm going to give it a pretty close look.
Yeah. As you should. But it is interesting. I mean, this has got to be the first, you know, Nintendo published or developed game to not have 3D on the system. And, you know, we had the 2DS announced a few weeks ago, and you know, I kind of took it as Nintendo sort of backing away from 3D, and I had a lot of people tell me, like, that's not true, it's just so they can get younger kids, you know, playing 3DS games. And I see that too, you know, because you've got that big warning that anyone under 7, you know, their eyes are going to fall out if they look at the 3D.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you have this marquee first-party title come out, and it's only using 3D half the time, you know, if that. I don't know what the breakdown is, obviously, between exploring and battles, and we'll call it 50-50, but it's interesting in them just saying that, hey, it takes away from what we're trying to do, so we're not going to use it. And that's the first time I've heard of a game being able to, like, kind of actively choose when to use a 3D and when not to. Like, as far as I knew, it was kind of a requirement to have it in throughout. So, I don't know. It's interesting. We'll see where we go from here, but I really think this is them beginning to kind of turn away from 3D and downplay it, not use it
Nintendo.
Unless it's necessary. Yeah,
you
I think
Nintendo,
so.
And this isn't, because Game Freak is, even though Pokemon is a Nintendo property,
sure.
Game Freak is, as far as I know, in a third-party studio, technically, so they can make games for whatever they want as long as they have the property with them. And I wonder that because Pokemon and Game Freak is so disconnected from Nintendo, if they made this decision themselves rather than Nintendo sort of telling them what to do like they do with so many of their EAD studios.
Right.
Yeah, I heard that perspective on trying to make it more accessible for kids. And that'd be a real bummer to me if they did it for that reason. If they actively decided not to put in 3D, not to allow anyone to have 3D during the overworld just for the sake of the children.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, actually, I just looked it up, and technically Game Freak is a, I think they'd be considered a second-party studio. They do exclusively make games for Nintendo platforms.
But does Nintendo have, like, at least 51% ownership of them?
I don't know.
Because
I'd have to look for into that more, but they obviously have some kind of deal worked out that they're only developing for Nintendo, so they are a second party, but, yeah. I don't know, but it's just, you know, I mean, this is a marquee title, and it's just interesting to see them not use it throughout. So, whatever the rationale they're giving is, I really think this is Nintendo kind of backing off and saying, you know, if you don't need to or want to use it, you don't have to.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, well, first off, Game Freak is technically a private company, which is interesting. But besides that, I think we'll see in, like, a year what their stance is. Because we'll see in next year's Pokemon game. I don't think any Pokemon game on 3DS is going to break this trend. But more interesting is going to be the games that aren't Pokemon. Let's say there's another Mario 3D platformer in 2014. Maybe they won't require the 3D on that.
Well, because in Mario 3D Land, didn't you have to use the 3D at certain points?
It made the game a lot easier during the bonus segments, but there are people who did play it in 2D and did not have much trouble.
Because that's the only 3DS game I played entirely in 3D, because I thought it looked really, really good in 3D, and then, yeah, there's points where you kind of needed it. So with the 2DS out there now, you would think they can't really build puzzles or moments anymore where you have to use it, because then you're kind of segmenting your user base. So, I don't know. It's interesting. We'll just have to see where it goes, but I'll definitely kind of interested to see what other first-party games are doing. And then if that kind of opens the floodgates for third parties to just completely stop, you know, using the 3D as well.
Yeah, all this news is really wait and see.
Yep, I agree. All right, well, that's pretty much it. So, Alex, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And we will talk to you guys later.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Trying a brief new segment called Games Nintendo Fans Might Like. In this segment, the goal is to briefly discuss a game that is not currently available on Nintendo consoles, but would be interesting to all of us who own Nintendo consoles. Think of it as a way to expand your horizons, and to see just how green the grass is on the other side. For this installment, I'm going to talk about Persona 3 and Persona 4, two Atlus RPGs that act as spin-offs of the Shin Megami Tensei series. If you like Shin Megami Tensei, and specifically Shin Megami Tensei 4, this is like that in the sense that it has the same focus on fusing demons and getting into JRPG combat situations. And these combat situations are those where the name of the game is abusing elemental weaknesses a la Pokemon. And like Pokemon, the combat is an addictive yet easily accessible affair of collecting monsters, switching them into battle, and exploiting the weaknesses of your enemies with attacks to achieve victory. On top of that, the monsters, or personas you collect, can be fused into stronger creatures, creating an enjoyable process of constantly fusing to get more powerful. The game is focused on dungeon crawling rather than exploration, which is far more rampant in Persona 3 than Persona 4, but it is certainly something to watch out for if you don't normally like these kinds of games. When you're not fighting demons, you're going day-to-day as a high school student in Japan. These segments are more like lighthearted visual novels, where you live a normal life as the main character, and spend time with your best friends who also fight alongside you in battle. Because the game runs on a non-real-time calendar, there are certain days that you have to go to school, certain days when you work, certain days when you can hang out with your friends, and certain days that are holidays. And because the writing is simple and often lighthearted, there are often times when you relax from the combat and enjoy spending completely normal and relatable time, either with friends or potential love interests. However, doing something as simple as going to the movies ties back into the combat, as the bonds you build with your friends directly influences how strong the demons you fuse end up being. The idea of building genuine friendships with people who are a lot like some of your real-life friends, and then going into combat with them is something so brilliant that Persona 4 specifically stands out as my favorite single JRPG of all time. I liked it so much that by the time I beat it, I was actually mildly depressed for about a week and a half that my 100 hours with these characters and this world was over. It's just that good. Finally, let's talk about the nitty-gritty. I'm specifically recommending Persona 3 and Persona 4 because these are the only two games in the series that have the same visual novel aspects in the combat. And the combat in Persona 1 and 2 is very much a different story. They are standalone experiences, so you can experience Persona 3 and Persona 4 without having to worry about the other games in the series. Saying that, I specifically recommend playing Persona 3 first, because it allows you to fully appreciate the gameplay and story improvements Persona 4 made. Persona 3 is now available on PS2, PS3 via PSN, PSP via UMD and PSN, and PlayStation Vita via PSN. Persona 4, meanwhile, is available on PS2 and PS Vita as Persona 4 The Golden, and this Vita version is the superior remake to the original game. If you enjoyed this segment and want to hear more, feel free to sound off in the comments. Thanks, guys.
Hello everyone, and this is once again an interview, and I am here with...
Gordon, from Gordon. Different... Yeah, I think that's my name, last time I checked.
Possibly.
So, welcome to the show. Could you introduce yourself to the public and what it is that you do?
Yeah, my name's Gordon, and I'm head of everything at Different Cloth, because there's only one of me, and I made a rhythm game called Liltline a few years ago for the iPhone. And my friends at Gaijin Games ported it to the Wii, so you may have played either version of those. And then I made another iPhone game, and took a couple of years off making a PlayStation game called Derek the Deathfin. And now I'm back in my natural rhythm home, trying to kickstart a sequel to Liltline called Liltline 2. And that's me.
We're going to talk about all of that today. So, cool. Like you answered already, my first question was to talk about the games that you have made, really.
Okay.
So... Late last year and a little bit this year, you brought like Derek the Deathfin to the market,
mm-hmm.
Which was a fantastic little game.
Oh, thank you.
No problem.
You have to say that, right? You can't be mean when I'm on your podcast.
Yeah, where you would munch on enemies and go for various levels. How did this venture really start?
Well, it kind of started all a little bit through Liltline when I was at the IGF in 2010 with it, and that kind of opened a few doors to talking to people who I couldn't have maybe talked to before. So there's a TV station in the UK called Channel 4, and they did have, back when people had money, they had an investment fund, like a risky investment fund for games and exciting media things.
Yeah.
And so I sent a proposal for Derek off to them, and they liked it, and I went to meet them and got funding off the back of that. with them and Screen Yorkshire, who are a TV company here in the UK. So it was part private money, part public money, got the funding to make a console game. Yeah. So that's how that happened. It was kind of luck and a good proposal, and I was quite convincing in the first meeting. I don't know how I did it, to be honest with you. It was like, you know, underwater paper game, fast, like Echo the Dolphin, but sillier sort of thing. But they liked it, so that's how it happened.
Well, I liked it too because of the art style, which was like papercraft, which was excellent in its own right.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of work to pull off, right? I mean...
It was, yeah, it was. Yeah. It was a lot of work to pull off. You are quite right. It took us, I don't know how many months, maybe 6 months to get the look right. Something like that. The idea with my original idea for the game was like a kind of cross between Sonic the Hedgehog and Echo the Dolphin.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it was Echo the Dolphin and Burnout, I think, was the original pitch. Like, I used to work at EA for a little bit on Burnout Revenge. 4 months I lasted. But anyway, it was supposed to be like a high-paced, high-octane, beautiful kind of thing. And I thought it'd be in a flat paper style. So, you know, like a layered pop-up book sort of style.
Yeah.
That was the original idea. But then when Ron came on board, the amazing artist who made everything look wonderful, he said, you know, let's do like full 3D papercraft. And everyone was like, wow, that's a really good idea. Why has nobody thought of that? Actually, Media Molecule had, but we didn't know that at the time. With Tearaway, obviously. So, yeah, so it took like 6 months getting the lighting and shadowing and getting the models right to look just like paper. The 3D models, you don't see them in that much detail, but if you do see them like close up, maybe I should publish them on the web somewhere. But the detail is amazing from the modelers, 1024, who did all that for us. They got exactly, you know, the rigid, the animation and everything. It's all quite... It's quite a long-winded thing to approach, kind of taking all the digital stuff out of a digital game to make it look more soft and papery. So,
yeah,
it was a long answer, wasn't it?
But I would love to see that, definitely, for sure. Maybe you should do it at some time. So, did Derek do well for you? Because I heard there were some struggles along the way, and I'm certainly curious about that as well.
Yeah. I did a blog post, I don't know if you saw it, about my 40 grand worth of debt.
Yeah.
That was, it was supposed to be 10 months, the project. 10 months to make a console game was wildly optimistic, especially when we spent 6 months getting the look right. So, so it overran into 2 years, and then we kind of self-funded the end of it because we wanted to get it done. And we couldn't really go and pitch it to other people because of the contract we originally had. So we just wanted to get it done. It was a labor of love, you know, a passion project. And so we just took the time to finish it and borrowed the money to do that. And yeah, it was a little bit underwhelming at first because October is not a very good time to release a little video game, it turns out. we were trying to get it done all summer, like, let's get it done, let's go. And then it just got pushed and pushed, and then QA, and you know, as I'm sure you know, releasing a console game can be quite complicated, you know?
Yes.
So, and it can take a long time, the ratings, the QA, and all the rest of it. And so in the end, we found ourselves in October, but we had to release because we needed the money. So, yeah. But things picked up kind of, you know, November, December, January, and they got released on PC. So it came back a bit from its original slow start. So it's paid back, you know, some of that debt. And I've been contracting and stuff as well to pay back it. So it's fine now. Obviously, you know, you think when you're starting something, this is going to be amazing, and everyone's going to love it, you know, like you do. But you know, you can never tell until it's done how many people will pick it up. But you know, we're proud of it, and we're very happy we made it, and we'll see what happens with it in the future. You know, we still got it there; we can do whatever we like with it.
Definitely, it's still an opportunity there for the future.
Yeah. I mean, we could bring it to. We always say bring it to Vita and stuff, and then people get really excited. But you know, we're always talking to anybody who wants to give us a little bit of money. We'll put it on anywhere, to be honest. So, you know, it could come to Vita, could come to iOS, could do anything, really.
Everything is still possible in that regard. So then going a bit further back, because that's sort of the main discussion here right now, because we talked a bit of Derek, but way before that, there was a little game called Lilt Line.
Yes.
So many people who... I assume there will be many people who never played Lilt Line before.
There must be loads of them, right?
Yeah.
Most of the world. They should correct that.
Yes. Should you... Do you want to give a proper introduction to that game?
Yeah, sure. So Lilt Line was the world's first dubstep minimal rhythm racer, I guess. It was done at a time before dubstep was in every music game trailer from some really talented guys here in London called 16-Bit. And so the style of music was something that hadn't been seen in rhythm games before, and it was quite abrasive and quite harsh. And also the style of the game was kind of a bit like Doctor Stream, if you ever played. I'm sure I know you've played it. But it's kind of a retro Bit Generations Nintendo title.
If people are more familiar with WiiWare games, there's also, I think, a sequel to Doctor Stream.
Yeah, Light Tracks.
Light
Tracks, was it?
Light Tracks, yeah. Light Tracks.
So kind of similar to those two in that you're racing through a tunnel using the iPhone to tilt to keep within the tracks, which get increasingly faster and more tricky, and then tapping to the beat, which comes in from the right. So it's kind of a tilt and tap, dubstep, minimal rhythm music extravaganza.
Yes.
Has that sold it well enough?
So I originally played on iOS and thought it was a really fun, like, side-scrolling music rhythm game.
Yeah, thanks.
It had these games had these simple mechanics of like stirring around and tapping on the screen to hit notes.
Yeah.
But the chorus design, that was so insanely tricky. And I just played it today again. It is insanely tricky.
Sorry about that.
But it's so much fun to play.
That is my fault. That I do like, you know, hard arcade games. I guess I've grown up on that kind of thing. Sonic, I guess, is, you know. Well, Sonic's not that hard, actually, is it? But I do like, you know, kind of challenging, a bit different kind of experiences. So that's my fault. That I have that, I guess, in common with Gaijin games, especially their earlier stuff, was always very punishing, wasn't it? So it was no surprise that they liked the game as well, and then we hooked up.
How did the design, like the music and the chorus line, come together so well? Because like the intensity of the music and then going through these various hoops and loops is like, it becomes all like this incredible fun fest, really.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. That was the whole idea, really, was to kind of experience the music. The original idea, I played around with a bunch of prototypes. Mm-hmm. I'd never made an iPhone game before either, so I was kind of learning as I was going along. My original idea was that the course would make the track, so the beats would be there, but your movement of the line would be the pitch in the track. So as the way you play the course kind of creates your own music, if you understand what I mean.
Let's say
the line goes up, the pitch goes up of whatever tune of the song you're playing. Unfortunately, that sounded shit. And so, it was a good idea, but and that's when I thought, right, okay, I need to get some professional musicians in here. And I got in touch with a friend of mine, actually Liam, who I was working with at the time. He said, yeah, this would be a good fit for your game. Check these guys out. And it was 16-bit, and I loved it. And I got in touch with them through MySpace, which was popular back then. And they said, yeah.
Is that still a thing, MySpace?
I don't know, really. Nowadays, I got in touch with Bill Gates for the sequel, Little Line 2, through Twitter. So, you know, that's how things move on. Yeah? And in 5 years, it'll be something else, probably. But got in touch with them, and they were like really into it and said, yeah, cool, let's do it. And then I just worked away on it. I always had this vision of playing through the music. The music, obviously, as it changes in tune, it changes the color of the levels, you know, as the beats come in, and you can get dark or steep curves. So I'm always trying to do the synesthesia thing, even though I can't say it, which is to feel the music, visualize the music, play the music. Is what I think is, I love to do that kind of stuff. And it's only very minimalist, isn't it? It's not got a lot of stuff going on, but still, I think it does the job. But Little Line 2 will do a lot more of that. So, you know, there'll be a lot more of, more effects, a lot more, you know, crazy courses, maybe loop the loops, you know, thinner sections. And when I plan to kind of take that visualization of the music to the next kind of level.
We're going to talk about a little bit later. But first, there's one more question concerning, like, the game eventually came to WiiWare.
Yeah.
Of course, the Gaijin games, which we just name dropped, and we'll name drop it again.
We can name drop them all the time. They're the best people in the world now.
Well, I worked with them around one or two. Playtest all there for their levels. So.
Yeah. I know you know them as well. Yeah. They're cool guys, right?
Yeah, they're really cool guys. And I was really happy with that. I think I actually said it as well with like an interview with Alex even before like the WiiWare version came out, as I was really excited about it. And so far I understand, I believe that you revealed figures on the entire thing, so maybe you can better speak to this. But it didn't do terribly well on that service?
No, it didn't do well enough to break the thresholds. They don't have them anymore, but they used to have sales thresholds.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about, really. But anyway, there were sales thresholds for Europe and America, and we didn't break through them, so we didn't get paid, basically. Which is more of a bummer for Gaijin than for me, because obviously I was just happy to get any console game out, and they spent the time to develop it, and didn't see any returns from the time they spent on it. But, you know, they're such awesome guys. They don't, you know, any other development house would be like, yeah, Gordon, okay, loser, we're not talking to you again. You've wasted our time and money. But they're happy they did it. You know, they're just really cool like that, aren't they? They did it for the love, as they do everything for the love. So they don't mind that it doesn't make any money. I don't mind. But obviously, well, those days are gone now, and you're on a Wii U and everything else, you don't have a threshold to meet before you get paid, which obviously makes much more sense.
Yes, it makes much more sense to release the game now then.
Yeah.
But that's also so good, like, segue into Lilt Line 2, not 2 as number 2, but 2-0-0.
That's right, yeah, that's another one of my amazing innovations.
New names coming every single step of the way. So, it might get a sequel through the means of Kickstarter, which is something I never expected to happen.
Really? Why is that? You thought it was done now?
I didn't think that many people would be excited. I was like, really? People want this? I was like, yes! People want
this. Yeah, people seem to like... The thing is, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's a niche title, but people remember it because it was in the IGF, and there's like a lot of... The people that like it, like yourself, you know, they really love it. And I think, like, everyone was deciding what to do after Derek. You know, it's finished. The sale's picking up a bit, but it's not done spectacularly well. I'm not buying a villa in the Bahamas just yet. What should I do next? You know, working a little bit, contract work. What should I try next? And everyone who I talked to said, you know, really love Lilt Line, make a Lilt Line 2. I always wanted to go back to rhythm games because that's, I guess, what I love most to make. So, yeah, and everyone just said, yeah, make a new version of Lilt Line. I've got this idea, we'll do multiplayer or do 3D. And everyone was, you know, basically asked for it, especially our friend Mr. Holmes. When I did a Sup Holmes with him, I remember I talked to you on that as well. You were on that as well. Yeah, he's a classic example. Let's do it. Everyone would love it. So I thought, yeah, I would love to do it too. Let's try. And I guess the great thing about Kickstarter is, if, as it seems, it gets over the line and gets published, then you know that people want it. And, you know, development, or at least most of development, is funded. So that's the cool thing, isn't it? If it doesn't, then, well, maybe people didn't really want it.
So looking at what you're doing with the gameplay, it's quite an impressive feat on its own. So you're bringing the 3D environments, like top-down views, all of these other changes to the levels.
Yeah.
Are you pretty well aware of what you're doing, or where are you going to take this title?
Yeah, I mean, what you see in the video and the screenshots is like a prototype. So it's a couple of months' work, getting everything up and running in Unity, which I learned making Derek. So getting 3D transitions in, tunnels, getting the line to follow like a curved shape, so up and down hills, timing, getting all the beats in and stuff. So there's like three half levels that I've made. So what I plan to do is take the original Lilt Line, put Ill Gates' tunes in, which are much more varied. So there's more like softer stuff, like house, hip hop, glitch, dubstep as well, like Ill Gates. So, and represent those tones in the game to give it a kind of more varied feel, as well as the in your face, which you will have plenty of that. Don't worry, lots of hardcore stuff. I know you like that. But yeah, so the plan is just to take it to the next level, full 3D, you know, all kinds of craziness, and multiplayer, local and online as well. So that's the thing. I've got a kind of visual idea of where it should go, and Ace Musician on board, and the engine is right. Everything's kind of set up to go. Where it goes, I don't really know yet, because I haven't properly started building it, but it'll go somewhere nice, I'm sure.
So, you're now working in a sequel with the musician called Ill Gates. What different flavor does he bring to the table for the game, then?
Well, if maybe you link to his tunes from the podcast, but yeah, he's a very, very talented guy, and I was listening to his music on Spotify, and I thought, actually all the time, when I listen to music, I visualize what it'd be like in a game. That's what I do all the time. Different styles of games, I guess it's an affliction I have. As if you make games, you know, every time I pick up a cup, oh, that could be a game, cup picking game. But with music, it's much worse. I always visualize music a little bit when I'm listening to it. And I was listening to his tunes, and I thought that would be amazing to fly through those, you know, Lilt Line style, but 3D. So he has a lot of, you know, dubstep or glitch kind of, or hip hop sort of stuff, which is quite driving, quite fast, which would work in the same kind of way as the original Lilt Line. And then he has softer, more melodic stuff too. So the variety of his music, and the fact that he's more driving, faster stuff would be really like ace in a music game. So I guess the answer is in my brain. If you could see all the pictures there, then I could better tell you than to explain. But
okay, I will definitely give them more listen then. So your initial goal of the project is £15,000? Yeah. But when enough money is raised, it could come to PlayStation Vita and Wii U.
Yeah, that would be cool.
How will you use these consoles? Have you already given it a thought, really?
The idea was, obviously, the original was iPhone, so iOS is the base, like £15,000 if you get there, and then Android obviously is a natural extension from that, so it'll be exactly the same. And then Vita obviously has touch and accelerometer and all the rest of it, gyroscope in there, so that would be the same. And that was the original goals, but then everyone said, oh, bring it to Nintendo, what about Nintendo? And I had a chat with Dan, I'm sure you know Dan Adelman from Nintendo in the States, he was a really cool guy. And he said, yeah, he'd be happy to lend me a Wii U dev kit. And I thought, yeah, that would be cool. Everyone would be into that. Obviously, one would need the most work. That's why it's the highest stretch goal. But you've got your little controller there, again, with accelerometer and touch and stuff. So how that matches up with the big screen, I don't know. But I'm sure we can do lots of exciting things, to be honest. So that is the one that would be the most far out of all the versions. The other ones would be variations on a theme.
Yeah.
But that one may be the best version. Anyway. I'm sure it would be.
You never know. Mm-hmm. It will take a time to learn everything that you want to do with the game, but it has to be funded first. So.
Yeah.
Here comes a bit of a downer question.
Okay, go on then. Go on.
Yeah. What if the Kickstarter goals aren't met?
Wow. I don't know. Then I have to decide what to do next. And maybe I'll carry on making the game, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just do something else. I've got plenty of ideas, millions of ideas. I don't want for ideas. What I lack is money to make those ideas a reality at the moment.
Definitely. Yeah.
So we'll have to see. We'll have to see. I hope we can get there. And if we don't, then maybe I just don't make the game. Or maybe I make the game at a much slower pace. Maybe I make some smaller games first and with that money come back to Little Line 2 later. It certainly won't get done in the same time frame. Let's say we didn't meet the goals and I still decided to make Little Line 2. It would take 2 or 3 years, definitely, at the current to make it. I think, you know, like spare times, the odd day when I'm not working and stuff. So I don't know if it will get made, to be honest. If we don't meet the goal, it won't get made in a hurry, let's put it like that. But we're going to make the goal on the positive side of things. We're going to be there. We're 20% already.
Well, we don't know if we're going to reach Vita or Ryu, so...
That's true. I hope we can get to the £15,000 and then we'll see. You know, if it comes out on iOS, and I've already spoken to Shahid, who's a really good guy at Sony, same kind of attitude as Dan and Nintendo, just interested to talk to all indies. So, you know, if it comes out on iOS and everyone loves it, then maybe, you know, the big boys will come and say, you know, here's some money, put it on my platform too. You never know what might happen. The most important thing for me is to make this game that I really want to make, and I know it's going to be cool. And then from their platforms, are not too much of an issue for me. I know everyone on the internet is always like, yeah, bring it here. You already know, like, bring it to Steam. Why don't you bring it to PC? What's wrong with this? That's always the questions you get when you make a game is, you know, why are you not bringing it to my platform? But
yeah.
As long as it's a cool game, that's the main thing for me, and then it can go everywhere.
It's at least good that those two developer interest people said, yeah, we're interested in having that game on the platforms.
Yeah, no, it is cool. The response has been really, really cool. Better than I expected. I guess maybe like you expected it to be. Because it is quite a niche title, a very niche title, but that niche is passionate about it. So you can go far on like a little group of people who are passionate about, you know, like Sword and Sorcery was, you know, looked like a niche title, didn't it? But there's a lot of people in that niche, so it did really well.
Who knows? So I'm running out of things to ask, so is there anything else that you want to bring up, really?
No, not really. Not really. I guess I could pitch the Kickstarter again.
Well, that would be my final question, yeah, to give a 1-minute pitch for the Kickstarter. And better make it good so that people can check it out.
Oh, no, I'm under pressure now. Not again. I already did. Well, with the video, I tried to make the pitch funny. That was my idea, to try and make it funny. But my wife hated it. She said, it's rubbish. It's not funny. I'm trying too hard.
Really?
She's like my harshest critic. She's German, so she's very straight to the fact, you know. So that's not funny. You're trying too hard. This is not going to work. But most of the time, people take it in a good spirit. But a couple of comments have been like, oh, that guy's really arrogant at the end when he says it's for my children. I can't believe it. There's been only a couple of people have said that. But, so, yeah. But what can you do? You have to try and make it stand out because there's so many Kickstarters now, aren't there? And I think a lot of the press have got in particular the press have got Kickstarter fatigue. You send anybody an email with, it's a Kickstarter, it's just closed, you know. And I mean, they must get like 200 Kickstarter emails a day or something.
Well, be honest, even the Nintendo side has a lot of Kickstarters now. So it's kind of incredible, really.
It's like a plague. But it's good for little creators like me if it can get people passionate and behind a project.
Definitely. And all of the Kickstarters, the others that coming currently to Wii U are doing pretty good right now, so it's way better to get behind one who is way more important to me.
Yeah, no, that's really good of you.
Yeah.
Cool.
But do you want to do the pitch, or do you think from it will not be fantastic?
No, I can do it. You ready?
Yeah, go.
Okay, so if you like rhythm games, or music games in general, or have an interest in the future of games, check out the Little Line 2 Kickstarter, which is probably linked under this podcast, and support us if you want. Any little bit that you can give will help to make the game, and it will be excellent. I promise you that. At least it will be different and intense.
That was a very quick picture, though. They did it in 25 seconds.
25 seconds. Here we go. Was it convincing, though? Probably not. Never mind. You get the feel.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
We had way worse.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
I'm not going to shame people.
Ah, that's a shame. That was my next question. Who was it?
No, I'm not going to.
I'm only joking, yeah.
Okay, then all that rests me is to thank you for being on this interview.
No, thank you for your time. Take care, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.
Alright, and that will do it for this week's episode of Connectivity. As always, you can send your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't done so. And you should follow all of us on Twitter. Go to nintendoworldreport.com and look through the Twitter sidebar on the right-hand side of the page, and you'll find our usernames there. Now stick around for a bonus segment all about Doctor Who. Hello, and welcome to a bonus segment of Connectivity, all about Doctor Who. Doctor Who's not back yet, but there's been a lot of sort of news and Doctor Who-related things that have been happening, so we thought maybe we'd do a recap here before, the 50th anniversary a couple months from now. I have with me today Amanda Albert.
Hello.
And Nicholas Bray.
Hello.
The Doctor Who crew at this point. Patrick sometimes subs in, but it's been us three for a pretty good
amount of time now. Screw you, Patrick.
Yeah, fuck off. So, today, we're going to talk about a couple things. We're going to talk about the reveal of the next Doctor, which happened probably about a month or two ago now. We'll talk a little bit about the 50th anniversary, some rumors, the poster that came out, just a lot of speculation. And then Nicholas, is it a recently discovered pilot for Doctor Who that we all watched?
No, it's always been around. It's just
okay,
the first,
so it's just literally the first
the
episode.
The first episode
okay.
ever of Doctor Who, an unearthly child, yeah.
Okay, cool. I don't know why I got that into my head that was like maybe something that was just discovered. Okay. Cool. Alright. So we all watched the first episode of Doctor Who, so we can talk about that a little bit too. So let's talk about the new Doctor. So Peter Capaldi, I guess is how you pronounce his last name?
Yes, I think that's right.
Looks right to me. Was announced, and I guess the thing that's striking right away is that he's an older gentleman. Kind of like bunking the recent trend of having these young, suave, doctors that drive the ladies wild.
And, Silver Fox.
And most men wild. Yeah, a Silver Fox, though. Yeah, not still not a bad-looking dude in his own right, but definitely aged a little bit. What did you guys think about that?
I was relieved that he was old, yes.
Yeah. I mean, because it was either that or he was going to have to be, like, one of the kids from, like, One Direction or something, right? Like, if they kept going younger, he was going to be, like, 15.
No, not Harry Styles, no.
I mean, that was like the direction they were going. So.
It's fun to then turn to my lady friends and see who's gonna stick with it.
Who are the true fans?
Yeah, I can silently judge.
Well, that's true because, like, I feel like with David Tennant and Matt Smith, like, it not entirely, but obviously their sort of appeal has drawn a lot of people in.
A lot of ladies.
A lot of ladies in particular, fellas. Yeah. And some fellas. So it is. It's an interesting departure, and I do wonder what the response will be.
For the most part, I think it's been pretty positive so far. I mean, he's been in a lot of other good stuff, and
he's a respected actor, so...
Yeah, he's a good actor, and he's been a fan since Hartnell. Since he was a young person.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, have you guys seen... I think, what was it? The thing I hear most people say is In the Loop, I think, was a movie or a show he was in.
That's a movie based on the show he did, The Thick of It.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, The Thick of It. That's right. I've heard that, too. Have you seen any of that?
Yeah, I'm watching it now. It's really freaking funny. I kind of wish that he could play the Doctor the way he plays Malcolm Tucker, because it's just the worst things you've ever heard somebody say.
That's what I've heard everyone say, is that, like, if he brought that character over, like, it would just be just nonsense, like, nonstop, just fouling.
Yeah, like I was telling Mike, it would be funny because I've been drawing these, like, designs where it's like, you know, the Ninth Doctor saying fantastic, and then his sonic screwdriver, and then the tense is, you know, Alonzi, and then Geronimo, and then his would be like, fuck the fuck off.
That'd be his, like, catchphrase.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good.
There's been great, like, mashups on YouTube already where they take stuff that character says,
oh, yeah,
and they intersplice it where he's just telling off Daleks, and it's, that would make me so happy.
And did you guys hear about the thing with him? He was in World War Z, the movie.
Yes, yes. He was, his character was, Dr. W.H.O. An acronym, yeah.
Yeah, which is a funny little coincidence there, or maybe not. I don't know. That's a pretty wild coincidence if that's the case.
But. Yeah, and he's been in Who before too. He's in the Fires of Pompeii.
Yeah, just like wasn't Amy in the Fires
the
of
same
Pompeii?
Episode,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's crazy. So we have another like one-off character or actor, I should say, comes back for a prominent role.
So we should just start
the same episode.
We should just start looking into the whole cast of that episode.
Yeah, who's his companion going to be from that episode, yeah.
Yeah, right.
He's going to dump Clara at the start of the next season.
Yeah, well, yeah, next time there's, like, a rumor of a new character coming aboard, rather than all these, like, crazy guesses, we should just go back and watch that episode and pretty much any old episode of Doctor Who, and we can probably pick them out, or at least narrow down the list. But, yeah, it's pretty exciting. So when did they, Matt Smith, the Christmas episode this year will be his last one, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I keep thinking it's gonna be like a downer Christmas episode if he dies at the end.
Yeah, that's true. I was surprised they didn't just do it at the 50th anniversary episode. You know, you've got the two doctors brought together, Tennant and Smith, like why not use that to kind of bridge to the next, I don't know. Like,
well, it's a little bit of a tradition to right around that Christmas special for it to change hands, right?
Have they?
Cause Tennant came on at Christmas.
Yeah,
that's true. He did.
Mm, yeah.
And I guess the very first episode with Eccleston, that was around Christmas, wasn't it?
It was like April or something.
Oh, really? No?
Okay. April or March.
Oh,
I
yeah. That
it was
like the crazy episode with the mannequins, right? Isn't that his first,
yeah,
the first
Autons,
episode?
Yeah, the Autons, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. But, yeah, I don't know. So it'll be interesting. But they'll make it like bittersweet, and I'm sure it'll be lovely.
They'll make everybody cry.
Yeah. I wonder what he'll do, you know? David Tennant went back and visited all his old companions and friends and everything. I wonder what Matt Smith's departure will be like.
He's going to... We'll see all his bow ties.
Yeah.
I have
That'll be good.
I have a question for you guys. When What was the situation when you guys found out about the 12th Doctor?
I was asleep.
Yeah, I wasn't watching I wasn't watching it myself, but I was like following along on Twitter, so I was kind of waiting for the announcement.
I think I woke I think I woke up at like 7 o'clock and just checked Twitter.
Did you watch it live?
Yeah. Now I feel stupid.
Well, truthfully, I don't have cable. I always just download the episode.
Oh, I don't either.
Oh, so would you just watch like an internet stream?
Yeah. Nice. Somebody had a stream over in London of BBC, so I got to watch it that way. But I don't know. I'll be quiet. I'll stop. I don't want to embarrass myself.
Well, no.
I was comparing it to the moon landing. I was very excited.
Did it pay off?
Yeah, because I had a Excel spreadsheet of going back and forth as a joke with my friends about who the potentials were. So there were a lot of bets being placed, and Mike had to know as soon as possible whether or not he should be smug. So, you know, we had to watch that live so he could be right about Capaldi. Because that's who he wanted, and that's who he got.
Wait, he actually got it right?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even hear him being in the running up until the
end. I never even heard his name mentioned, yeah.
About 2 days before, that was like the news on the internet, is that he was likely to play it, and then Mike started trying to connect the dots, and he was like, well, he played, you know, in World War Z, this Who Doctor, that seems like a
sign.
Wow,
he worked all out before it happened.
Oh, we had like, you know, like a map on the wall with the little push pins and the string and the...
Amazing.
We don't have kids.
Yeah, so this is what you do to fill the hours.
Who needs love?
Yeah, we can chart who the next Doctor might possibly be.
Yeah.
Well, I recorded it, but still haven't watched it because it aired live here on our TV.
I just watched it again. How dare you? Amateurs.
But, yeah, so pretty exciting. I look forward to it. There's not really much to go off of yet. You know, I mean, we haven't seen him as the Doctor at all.
There was a tidbit from Moffat a while back, I think, saying that Capaldi's portrayal will be a bit more, like, fierce and, commanding, I guess, demanding.
Yes.
Than the past
I'm excited
two
about
doctors.
That. And he's keeping the accent.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll explain that, like, well, the TARDIS fucked up or something. Because he's always had an English accent.
Sylvester McCoy had a Scottish accent.
Ah, that's true.
Ace. He just used to call that Ace all the time. That's what I remember.
That's basically it.
Let's roll on then to the 50th anniversary, the Day of the Doctor, as we know the episode is called now, which will premiere November 23rd. So they just go ahead.
According to some fans, the day the Doctor's hair doesn't stand up anymore.
Yeah, I'm looking at the poster now. Yeah, it's all a little.
People
are
complaining
flat, huh?
That Tennant's hair's combed forward instead of in the coif.
I have a rebuttal to that complaint. He's got Billy Piper with him, or Rose Tyler.
Yes.
Yep.
Which means it would probably be sometime in season 2 mm-hmm. or series 2. And his hair wasn't sticky uppy then.
I was gonna say, when he first came on, his hair wasn't quite as rambunctious as it came to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would tie in with that. So
continuity. He's gotta have the right hair.
There you go. Another continuity that would definitely tie it to that time. We see in the poster here we've got Bad Wolf spray painted on like a broken brick wall. Some stuff there. So obviously, well, which if he's with Rose anyway, we know that. But obviously, yeah, it's taking place during that second series. What else do we have? It looks like some smashed Daleks in the background.
Does it look like there's a TARDIS sort of exploding as well?
Yeah, in the back, it looks like it's just the door of the TARDIS, kind of like off on its own. And and then you've got John Hurt walking towards us.
The Hurt Doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Who we're still not 100% sure who he is.
8.2
could be, yeah. The Doctor in between. So Amanda, before we started recording, you said you might have some crazy theories. So why don't you hit us with some of those?
These are nothing that I subscribe. It's just basically the thing I've learned from this show is don't believe anything till they officially announce it, and they don't really announce anything till the last possible moment, so that just makes nut jobs on the internet jump to conclusions and get upset about stupid assumptions, or really upset about Tenet's not sticky uppy hair. So, from what I understand, BBC hasn't, like, announced if any of the classic Doctor Who actors are returning.
Oh, yeah.
But then there's a lot of speculation about some of them actually returning. And I guess Peter Davison let it slip in an interview recently that he had a script.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And it was not his son-in-law's, and it had his name on it. So there was that, and then he said that he would be involved in some way with the 50th, but then he wouldn't specify. So, and I mean, he came back just for that Red Nose Day sketch a few years ago, so that would make me think that if they would ask him, he would definitely do it.
At the same time, if he was in it and it was only him, I don't know. I don't really like his Doctor.
Oh, no?
No,
that's
not
Mike's
really.
Favorite classic Doctor Who actor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it, to me, it's like, I don't know if that means he's going to necessarily come back in it or not. Mm. But I would think that if he is, that means any of the other living actors are going to be involved in some capacity. It doesn't seem in any no way to me that they would have just one back. I mean, maybe they won't get Eccleston, but that's not because BBC won't have him.
Right. In my feeling about this, and I was talking on Twitter with someone a few weeks ago, but they were so open and forthcoming about David Tennant being involved that it's like, to me, there's got to be something still that we don't know.
I think they have to say that he's going to be in it, though.
Yeah, sure, but the fact that it wasn't a secret, that it was like, okay, we're telling you this, just makes me feel like there's going to be more that they're not telling us, because there always is. So, like, I expect at this point for other doctors to show up in some capacity, because they're keeping that tightly under wraps.
Yeah.
And I feel like they tossed David Tennant out there so we know something, everyone gets excited, and then there's going to be something more to it. You know, like, they're not going to just reveal everything this far in advance and not really have any surprises, especially considering it's the 50th anniversary. So
I agree with you.
And even the season finale, you know, the series finale, we had all the doctors sort of reappear in clips and, like, homages and stuff, which I don't think we've ever had. Well, I guess there's been a few, like, allusions, like when Matt Smith's doctor, you know, in his first episode, I think the alien or whatever is kind of, like, scanning, you know, for, like, his database about the doctor, and it shows each of their faces for, like, a split second, and then he walks through the David Tennant, like, projection. But other than that, like, there hasn't really been much in the way of, like, clips of the past doctors. And then this last episode, like, completely blew it out and had them featured pretty heavily, so I think there's going to be a lot of classic Doctor.
Yeah, I think
in this.
I think it's just definitely not their style to let all the details out. I think there's all kinds of shit that they have going on that they're not going to tell us. They're just going to let it come out that day. And the only thing that I would if they said all the classic actors that are living are coming back, I would be excited, but I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be really surprised if they've been lying out their ass this whole time about Eccleston not doing it, and then he ended up being in it after all.
Yeah, I think he will be in it. I think that's an easy
one. I hope
one.
So, man.
The other ones are harder because they've aged so much, and it's like, well, how do you explain that, really?
Well,
you know?
Paul McGann still looks amazing.
Sure, but any before him, you know, it's gonna be rough.
I would settle just for Paul McGann because I think he deserves another TV shot. Like, it's not fair. It's not fair.
He's so great. Yeah, I definitely like whenever I see that Doctor Who movie from the 90s that he did.
Yeah,
it's definitely dated. But you see where there was a lot of potential for him to be a really good doctor, and I do like him a lot in the audio plays, and I always feel bummed that, you know, he's a dork for that show too, and all he got was the one episode on television.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He missed out on, like, its resurgence by about a decade, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
And he would have been a great doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd love to see him involved too. That would be fine, like you're saying. The past four doctors would be fine for me. I would be good with that. And then if any of the really old ones want to make some appearance, that's okay. But I want to see all four of them in some capacity. That would be great.
I always thought that a more elegant way to include the past Doctors, like the actors themselves, more so than the actual characters, would be just to cast them as different people. Like, they're still in it. They've still got their appearance in, but it's sort of, you know, just a nod and a wink to them being in it.
Or if you want to just do new dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
They could work something out.
They all do the audios now, so they could just record something like that, voiceover sort of stuff.
Yeah. And they could still use old clips of, you know, the ones that have passed away and everything. So.
Or they could take them out of the freezer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just thaw them and throw them back up in front of the camera. So let's move on to the very first episode of Doctor Who. Like I said, I didn't realize that this was the official first episode. I don't know why I was thinking this was like something that was uncovered, but yeah. So an unearthly child, I think, is what it's called. Yeah. I just watched it today for the first time.
What did you think?
I actually enjoyed it. I got like a lot of like a big Twilight Zone vibe.
Yes, I always say that.
You know, I don't know if that carries through a lot of his early stuff or not, but just that first half of it where you've got, you know, something's not quite right and you've got these teachers, and just because it's that time period, you know, you've got the woman who's like very concerned and really believes something's wrong, and then you've kind of got the like steadfast man who's like, I'm sure it's something simple, everything will be fine, but okay, like I'll humor you and we'll go investigate, you know, we'll follow this girl home and see where she's going. It was kind of like, I don't know, I love old stuff from like the, I don't know, the 60s. It was just kind of funny to me, that kind of overacting, and it, I don't know, it's kind of ham-fisted in a way, but I enjoyed it. And yeah, it was fun. I really did enjoy it.
I kind of find that acting sometimes more believable in a weird way. Like, it seems like it's heightened, but really if that shit was going on, you would be freaking out. Mm-hmm. Like, when you see the characters just gloss over something, that always takes me out of it.
Yeah.
So I do like that, watching it where it's all new and they're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It takes Ian until like halfway through the next episode until he's like, oh, okay, it's really happening.
Until he accepts that they've gone through time.
Yeah, basically. Because even when, I don't know if you watch the next episode, but at the start of the next episode, even though he's seeing the pictures from outside and everything and like, they seemingly have moved. Even when the Doctor opens the door, he's like, it's just impossible. Like, he's still trying to grasp that it's real. Like,
and he thinks that it's just a trick at a certain point, right? Like with the view screen?
Yep, yep. But just with the first episode, I think the way it's shot is really quite well done as well. Like, it seems to be, the camera's a bit more fluid and the movements are a bit more, slightly more cinematic in this first episode than maybe the proceed, like the next few.
Yeah, I agree. It did have a cinematic feel. It felt really well produced. You know, considering I think there was what, like three sets in the whole the whole episode. I mean, there's like, they're in the classroom. I think there's a hallway in the school. They're in their car. They're in the junkyard, and then in the TARDIS. You know, so yeah, there's like five places they are. But you know, they made the most of it. I think you're right. The camera was very fluid. It was moving around in the sets and everything. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't standing still. It didn't feel static.
And this was, cause they recorded this episode twice. The first time they shot it on the DVD, there's the two versions of this episode. There's the pilot episode, which they call it now, which was shot, and there was a bunch of mistakes, and they just weren't happy with it, like with the production. So it was they were told to do it again. So then some of the lines and things changed. It was alluded to at first. The Doctor was from the 49th century, and he wasn't necessarily going to be an alien. Which that line was later changed to, we're like travelers from another world, blah blah blah. Susan in the pilot was also dressed differently and acted more, a bit older and slightly more alien and stuff as well. They sort of toned her down to be more of a schoolgirl in the Transmitted episode.
What is her actual, like, I mean, she's not human, right? I mean, she's...
Well, she's the Doctor's granddaughter.
Okay.
There's no real other explanation ever. They just kept it saying she's his granddaughter. The only reason that she was at the time was because they thought it would be a bit strange for a young girl to be traveling around with an old man.
Yeah, so they made it like a familial thing rather than now, where it's just like any random woman will travel along with the Doctor. Okay, because that's interesting, because I know, you know, the newer stuff, you know, it's a big deal that he doesn't really have a family. So when they said it was his granddaughter, I thought like, oh, like maybe that's a cover up, or maybe that's not entirely true. So she's a Time Lord then? I mean, she...
Well, Time Lord's a rank, right? Not a race.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think she's part of his race at least, but...
She's from Gallifrey.
She's from Gallifrey, yeah.
So she's Gallifreyan, I guess, but not a Time Lord? Would be the way to look at it?
Yeah.
They're ambiguous about a lot of stuff with her, I mean...
Yeah, it's still pretty vague.
Yeah.
Because she was only in it for a year. She goes at the end of the first year.
Oh, okay.
But that year is like 45 episodes long.
Oh, okay.
Because Doctor Who ran pretty much all year back in the 60s.
And it was just every episode was 20 minutes?
Yeah, 20 to 25 minutes, yeah.
Okay. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I really did. It kind of makes me want to go through some of this old, you know, I've kind of needed that impetus to make me go through it, and so
do it.
Having watched this first one, maybe I'll start to do it. How much of the first Doctor's like run is available?
Because
I know a lot of that stuff has been like lost, right?
I've got some of most of them.
Do you?
The ones that are available. There's about 20 stories that are available.
Oh, okay. Okay, so quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. The first Doctor's stuff, like, it can be pretty good. It's, as long as you can, like, put yourself in the time period and sort of just take it as it is. Because about a decade ago, the ABC here aired every episode that is surviving from the beginning. So I first started watching it from Hartnell and just went through every day. They played, like, one episode a day, like Monday to Friday. Until they ran out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty good, but the next three episodes of like this unearthly child story, some people don't really like. It could be a bit dull because it's like cavemen like learning how to get fire and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but the story directly after that is the very first Dalek story, which would be interesting to check out, I think.
Yeah, I'll have to do that. I like too that and I've heard this, but that the Doctor just really isn't interested at all in sort of interacting with you know these human characters.
No, the Doctor's it took a while for Hartnell to become the Doctor, like character wise. He was sort of didn't like the companions and tried to, you know, he just wanted to go off by himself and like not really worry about taking them home. Like at the start of the Dalek story, he. They were like, oh, we've got to go, let's just go, because they land in, like, a radioactive forest, and the Doctor's, oh, no, let's go down and explore this city, you can do what you want, I'm gonna go and do it. And in the second or third episode of An Unworthy Child, he implies that he's going to bash the caveman's head in with a rock, just to get rid of him, like...
Yeah, he's like a, cause he's like a, he's injured, right? He's a hindrance to them getting away.
Yeah, he's like, Chesterton, we must leave him here. And like, they all want to help this caveman. The Doctor's like, nah, let's just bash him on the head and get out of here.
That's funny. But, you know, in a way, I guess that ties into what they, you know, what they've done, especially with Matt Smith, you know, traveling so long without a companion. You know, they've kind of touched on that he loses some of his, humanity, which is funny to say because he's not human, but he loses some of his compassion in a way when he's been alone for so long.
Yeah, the people soften him.
Right. So, you know, in a way that still seems very canonical if this is his first, or at least one of his first interactions with humans. So that's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited. I'll probably do it. Have you seen a lot of the Hartnell stuff, Amanda?
There's a lot of Hartnell, but I've probably seen about 15 different episodes. Not stories altogether, but just individual episodes.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one that I think is pretty good is the Aztecs. You can watch that and see what you think. That's when he's lightened up a bit and warmed up to the companions. It's got a lot of action, and the story doesn't move super slow, and it's got some pretty good funny moments, too.
The Aztecs is considered like a classic story of the old stuff.
Okay, I'll have to look that up. Is any of the old stuff, like Hartnell stuff, on Netflix, or am I going to have to scour the internet for this?
The Aztecs is on Netflix, yeah.
Is it? Okay, cool.
Do you like that one, Nick?
I haven't watched it for about 5 or 6 years, so I remember liking it at the time, but I can't really remember all the details of what happens in the story.
Do you have a particular favorite that you would suggest?
Let's see, I've been watching Hartnell recently, like, because I bought some new ones recently. I don't mind, like, the Dalek Invasion of Earth. I didn't mind that one. And the one I watched,
You're selling it.
Okay, the one I watched recently was called The Rescue, and it was the introductory story of the companion that replaced Susan, and it's quite good. It's only 2 episodes long.
Really? That's short.
Yeah, it was 2 episodes, and then it was like bundled together, because the next episode story is called The Romans, and it's like leads directly from that sort of thing. But yeah, it's only 2 episodes, and it's basically the TARDIS lands on this planet where like a human ship has crash landed, and I don't really want to give too much away, but
spoilers: the TARDIS lands on a planet.
Seemingly, the girl companion and her a man that was part of the space crew have been captured by this alien, and he's not letting them leave or contact their own people and stuff. So then the doctor and his companion show up and try and free them, and there's a bit of a twist in there, so.
And that's called The Rescue.
The Rescue, yeah. I think the set design's pretty good in that one.
That's something I have to say, like, smart choice without them really knowing it with the design of that TARDIS interior. When you first walk in and it's all, like, white and smooth, like, they didn't know that was going to hold up for as long as it has. Like, still, when you go back and watch it, you're like, yeah, that looks like a spaceship.
Yeah, yeah, even when I saw the inside of it for the first time in that first episode, the only thing that was weird to me is that when on the inside, the doors look different than they do on the outside.
Yeah.
the part of the door that would face out has, like, all the same, like, bumps and spheres on it, which didn't really make sense to me unless, I guess, there's another set of doors immediately inside the actual police box doors. But everything else, I mean, it's classic. You know, it looks just like the TARDIS still does, and that it's funny that style has really worked and not really needed to change. I mean, apart from maybe a few aesthetic things here and there, but
it kind of reminds me of Apple.
Yeah, I'll, like, just got one design and just kind of stick with it, refine it a little bit every year.
Well, no, just that with Apple products, everything tends to be white and smooth and
very clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clinical.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think that will do it for this little bonus segment of Doctor Who. A lot of interesting things going on. I'm excited for the Day of the Doctor in, I guess 2 months now.
What are you most excited about, both of you, for the 50th?
Oh, man, just seeing Matt Smith and David Tennant just talk to each other and interact. Like, there's going to be a lot of great quips where they're just, because the Doctor already will run off on a tangent by himself talking, and I've got two of them interacting together and
especially
talking.
Especially those two.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm really excited just to see, the whole episode could just be them together in the TARDIS just talking to each other, and I would be so happy.
What do you think, Nick? What are you most excited for?
I'm excited for the 50th, but I'm also excited to see the docudrama, An Adventure in Space and Time,
That looks good.
The one that sort of chronicalizes the creation of Doctor Who and William Hartnell and all that. Have you seen some of the stills with what's his name? The actor that's playing William Hartnell in costume.
The guy that killed all those people at the Red Wedding?
Yes, that guy.
The doctor. From Broadchurch. Yeah, he's a great actor.
He looks really good in the costume too. Like,
yeah, he looks just like him.
They could just film new episodes in black and white and you'd be like, oh yeah, it's William Hartnell.
They should just work him into the 50th.
But what about you, Amanda? What are you excited for?
Billy Piper? No. I hope that, other actors will be involved, that they've just been lying to us this whole time, and that we'll get Eccleston and McGann and Davison and Baker. That would be nice. Yeah, that is what I'm most excited for. The chance that they might be in it. Yeah, and then I'm most excited for, all the stupid complaints that are going to follow afterwards that I'm going to just have fun scrolling through.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. Just like when they announced Capaldi and a bunch of dumb girls were like, he's not hot!
Yeah. He's like a million years old.
It is cool, though, that he is the same age as William Hartnell was when he took the role.
Oh, is he really?
He's exactly the same age, like 55, yeah.
Wow, he aged a lot better. Jesus Christ.
Hartnell was wearing a wig, though. They made him look older.
He still looked old, man.
Yeah.
Just the posture and everything. Like, Capaldi, I'm not saying, like, everybody's got their own thing. I wouldn't say I'd totally go for it, but I wouldn't be insulted.
You're not writing it off. Like.
No.
Perfect. All right, that will do it. Now we'll end on Amanda running to be interested in a 55-year-old man. That seems like a good place to stop. So, Amanda, Nicholas, as always, thank you for being here. If you out there are a Doctor Who fan, and maybe you have some favorite early series episodes.
You didn't turn this off 5 minutes in.
if you have some old stuff that you think I should look at and watch,
I
haven't seen a lot of these.
This should be a thing. I think we should give you homework, and you can watch classic episodes,
that's the plan. No, that was sort of the plan.
That's what we were going to do to kind of fill the summer gap, and then things just got busy, I guess.
Okay, but, so what's your homework then? What has he got to watch? Should he watch The Rescue?
Well, Aztec sounds easy because that's on Netflix. Like, anything on Netflix is I can easily pop on and check out. But any of the others, I mean, yeah, I'm willing to do torrents or, like, this first episode was on Daily Motion. You know, if you can
find
stuff somewhere.
They're all on Daily Motion, dude.
Are they? Okay. So, I'll have to do that. Also, I don't know if if Hulu, is Hulu anywhere else but in America? Do you guys have Hulu in Australia, Nicholas?
Probably not.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, I haven't tried. There's a lot of stuff that we can't really access without sort of getting the system, but I don't really bother.
Hulu just announced they got Doctor Who.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, they have none of the classic stuff, but if you don't have Netflix for some reason, but have Hulu Plus and want to watch Doctor Who, all the new stuff from Christopher Eccleston on is on Hulu Plus now. So, pretty cool. It's all there, and you can just watch it straight through with commercials every few minutes.
And not return to civilization.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, there you go. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to everyone later.
Okay, bye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.